Support for New Retina Radio comes from Genentech, the makers of Vabysmo, faricimab SVOA. Are you ready to get started with Vabysmo? Our dedicated reimbursement team is here to support you every step of the way. Get in touch now at vabysmo-hcp.com/access-information.
Welcome to the New Retina Radio Journal Club with VBS. My name is Dr. Priya Vakaria from Retina Vitreous Associates of Florida in Tampa, and I'm joined today by two guests. First, we have Dr. Shruthi Arpali from the Emory Eye Center in Atlanta. Shruthi, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, Priya, thanks for having me.
And second, I have Dr. Vaidehi Dudhania from NYU Langone Health in New York City. Vaidehi, great to see you.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
All right, so today we're discussing a paper titled The Cost Effectiveness of Aflibercept Monotherapy versus Bevacizumab First, followed by Aflibercept if needed for diabetic macular edema. And this was a DRCR Retina Network paper with David Hutton as the lead author, and this was published online in JAMA Ophthalmology in February 2023. This was a spin-off from the data from the Protocol AC study looking more at cost effectiveness of aflibercept monotherapy versus bevacizumab monotherapy. And Shruthi, do you mind summarizing this paper for us?
Sure, of course. So Priya, like you were saying, this is a paper that looks at the economical analysis of Protocol AC that was published by the DRCR network. And for those of us who need a little refresher, because there's a lot of them, Protocol AC was the one that demonstrated that there's no difference in visual acuity in eyes that presented with center-involving diabetic macular edema. And these eyes also had to have a starting visual acuity of 20/50 or worse. And then what Protocol AC did was it divided these patients into two groups. They were either treated with aflibercept monotherapy and stuck with that drug throughout the whole regimen, or they were started on bevacizumab, and then they had the option to later switch to aflibercept if there's a suboptimal response. During this protocol, it was noted that about 70% of patients were ultimately switched to the aflibercept arm, but the overall Protocol AC showed that there was no significant difference in visual acuity. So now this Hutton paper is looking at the economical analysis or impact of this protocol. So a few words on the methods. In order to make this work, they had pre-planned for this economical analysis to be done at the initiation of the protocol. They used almost all the eyes that they used in Protocol AC. There were a few left because they only used patients with one eye that were involved. They were equally divided between aflibercept and bevacizumab. Patients had to be 18 years or older, have center-involving DME, and have a visual acuity between 20/50 and 20/320. These patients were followed every 4 weeks for the first year, and then they were spaced out depending on their response. And then at week 12, if you were in the bevacizumab arm and they saw that there was suboptimal improvement, so there were certain parameters that they set at the very beginning, then they had the option of switching them over to aflibercept. And a big part of the study was looking at something called quality-adjusted life years, or qualities, and then also looking at the amount of money that it takes to obtain that. And that was represented in something called an incremental cost-effective ratio, or ICER. And so when we looked at the breakdown of patients, what we found was 116 eyes were assigned to aflibercept monotherapy and 112 to the bevacizumab group first. We saw that the average number of visits between the two groups were pretty similar, about 20. We saw that the patients with the aflibercept injection received slightly less number of injections than the bevacizumab group, but not a huge difference. And the big thing was the cost of therapy. So they saw that the patients with the aflibercept monotherapy, the cost per participant for the 2 years was about $26,500. And compared that to the bevacizumab group that was ultimately switched over if they needed to be, that was only about $14,000. They also looked at this ICER versus quality ratio to see how patients do in terms of their quality of life. And there's a measurement that's in the literature that says if you have a ratio of ICER to quality of about 100,000, then it's cost effective. And what they showed in this paper is that if you're in the aflibercept monotherapy group, your ICER to quality ratio is something like $837,000. So significantly higher than what they expect for something to be cost effective. They also manipulated some of the numbers for this paper to see how they could change the price of aflibercept or bevacizumab to reach this threshold that's determined to be cost effective. And they said in order to do that, You can either drop the price of aflibercept to less than about $300, or they can raise the price of bevacizumab to over $1,300. So the overall points that were brought up with this paper is that they're trying to show that there's an economic reason to start patients on bevacizumab first and then switch them later to aflibercept if they need it, and that it's a much more cost-effective method to do, and that the quality gains were favored for patients who were on aflibercept monotherapy in the first year, but these were very small, and the cost for maintaining these was very high. So ultimately, it made more sense to start with bevacizumab and switch over later.
Fantastic summary, Shruthi, on a very complicated topic. So Vaidehi, I want to kind of throw this over to you. A lot of insurance companies are mandating step therapy, and Protocol AC is kind of showing that, you know, kind of mimicking step therapy, essentially, starting with bevacizumab and then tiering to aflibercept upon failed therapy. Now, how do you feel that this study influences your decisions? Does it make it more likely that you'll start with bevacizumab even if step therapy isn't in place? Or, you know, how does this affect your treatment algorithm?
Yeah, so currently the way that the way I was treating patients is if their vision was better than 20/40, I would start them on Avastin or bevacizumab. And if it was worse than like 20/50 or worse, I would start them on aflibercept. And, you know, yeah, cost is the primary driver for step therapy. It's really difficult to, for every single patient, get on the phone and do an appeal. And even when you do that, they don't accept it. And so generally, I think that what this shows is it provides us some comfort knowing that even if we have to do three bevacizumabs, we're not losing much by doing that. And we can explain that to the patient. I think sometimes the patients might get upset. You know, they read about aflibercept and some of these other medications that they want more than the bevacizumab. And so this is in a way to show them that this is what we have to do. And it's challenging. And I, you know, it may not be what you want, but there is data to support that if we start this way, also, we're not compromising your vision. And I think that that's the other aspect of it, because it seems like this might be here to stay.
Well, thank you so much for a wonderful summary. We're going to go into break now, but I want to remind the audience that we're going to be back to talk further about this study in a more in-depth fashion in just a few minutes.
Support for New Retina Radio comes from Genentech, the makers of Vabysmo, faricimab SVOA. Are you ready to get started with Vabysmo? Our dedicated reimbursement team is here to support you every step of the way. Get in touch now at vabysmo-hcp.com/access-information.
Welcome back to the New Retina Radio Journal Club with VBS. Shruthi Arapalli just summarized the economic analysis of the Protocol AC study, but I would like to get into a longer discussion about this. You know, we use these medications all day, every day, and this really impacts our decisions. And so I kind of want to touch on a few points here. The first thing is, for Shruthi, do you think payers are paying attention to this study, and payers that maybe are not mandating step therapy now are going to start mandating step therapy? You know, do you think that this study is going to influence policy, and should studies like this influence policy, or should there be other factors that influence policy besides cost and vision?
That's a great question. I think payers probably are paying attention to the study because we're under enormous stress in ophthalmology and retina itself to lower costs. And I think they're going to be looking for ways to cut costs wherever they can. I do think that it's nice that the study shows that starting with Avastin will give you equal visual outcomes, but there's a lot of unknowns and limitations that we'll probably get into. And so I don't think all policy should be based expressly on this paper. I think it takes away the art of medicine with physicians deciding what's best for their patients, and also taking into consideration other social factors, like is a patient going to follow up, how much of a response they're getting, and how much they trust they're going to get there with just bevacizumab versus another medication.
You know, one of the things this study talked about was, you know, you talked about the 50% cost savings, but You know, they commented that for every 10,000 new patients starting therapy for DME, there's going to be a cost savings of more than $125 million with a bevacizumab first versus aflibercept monotherapy treatment strategy. And that is huge. That difference is huge. But Vaidehi, we all know that this is using repackaged bevacizumab, which the big question is, how long is that still going to be available? You know, there's word of an possible FDA-approved bevacizumab that may be coming out to the market. And how is that going to change this?
Yeah, so I think that payers are also paying attention to that. And those that have not already mandated step therapy may be having paused and saying, let's see what happens. We don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot before we now mandate this. Because they don't know how it's going to turn out. And so I think that that's an incredibly valid thought, because we really don't know what the cost savings will be and how the medication usage is going to change when the biosimilars come out.
Yeah. So Shruthi, what are your thoughts? You know, you talked about the difference in ICERs versus QALYs and how you have to have a certain ratio of that to be cost effective. Do you think that these companies are looking at that and they're going to price their drug at some level that may make it, you know, more expensive than repackaged bevacizumab, but still have that ratio that you kind of described, which brings cost savings to the system?
I think if I were in industry or working with this new bevacizumab that's coming out, that's something I'd strongly consider, right? Because you already have a paper that's backing you and showing that you're saving the system money while still making the company who's manufacturing this money as well. The thing that I do worry about, like he said, is that once we start getting other drugs on the market or longer acting drugs or biosimilars, that convolutes this entire analysis. And it's almost like starting back at zero again. So we just have to be careful applying that to the other drugs too.
And that's a great transition into my next question. You know, by the way, we're getting longer acting therapies on the market. We're in clinical trials for medications that could last, you know, 6 months. We're talking about gene therapy. We're talking about lots of different things here. How do we reevaluate our treatment strategy as agents come out that have longer durability?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there, you know, from my perspective, there are two main things that we're thinking about here. One of them that you mentioned, which is the duration of effect. And so you can potentially even get more towards equity between these two medications in terms of the financial impact with medications that have a greater duration of action. But then you also consider treatment burden, which is different from even the duration. So getting 12 intravitreal injections a year and having 12 visits a year versus 2 to 4 versus maybe needing 6 and not having treatment in all of those. And so these are all kind of further analyses that we would hopefully be performing so we get a better idea of how this fits in our treatment paradigm.
Perfect. And the last question I want to ask is, you know, protocol AC, this was all related to diabetic macular edema. Shruthi, can we extrapolate any of these step therapy things to the other conditions that we use anti-VEGFs for, such as wet macular degeneration or retinal vein occlusion?
I mean, I think policymakers and insurance companies might want us to. I think it's wise to retest this hypothesis with those diseases as well. I think if I have a patient where I'm being forced to use the bevacizumab and they're asking me for aflibercept, I do take comfort in the fact that I can point to this paper and say, in a somewhat similar process, we've had good results. But I do think it'd be wise to look at each disease individually.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we know that these are different disease processes. We know that in some cases, wet macular degeneration is just not as forgiving as diabetic macular edema. And so, you know, I think, as you said, it's good to have this data behind us. I think payers are definitely have step therapy for the other conditions as well. But it does give you pause. You know, it's always better when you have some research behind you and you feel pretty confident with that decision. Well, I want to thank both of my guests, Dr. Shruthi Arpali and Dr. Vaidehi Dadania. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the New Retina Radio Journal Club with VBS. And thank you to our audience for listening today. Stay tuned as we'll have more episodes coming out, and have a great night.